Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. We will begin with a conversation with Anna Crosland, one of our community's most impressive citizens. She's the president and CEO of the International Institute in St. Louis. Last summer, she was honored by President Obama as a champion of change for her work with refugees. A few days ago, Governor Nixon nominated Anna Crosland to serve on the Missouri Commission on Human Rights. The commission investigates complaints about discrimination in housing, employment, and public accommodations. Confirmation hearings will be held next month, but we've invited Anna to be with us to talk about the nomination, the commission, and the International Institute's work preparing immigrants and refugees for citizenship. Also with us is Amy Pushkosh, citizenship instructor with the International Institute, and Sukh Sapkota. He's from Bhutan. He was naturalized in 2015. Thank you all so much for being with us. Nice to have you.
Thank you.
Anna, I'll begin with you. Just talk a little bit about this nomination. Yet another recognition for Anna Crosland. There have been so many recently and all well justified. What does this mean to you?
Well, personally, I'm gratified that the governor's office feels that I have the competencies to be able to serve on the Missouri Commission for Human Rights, which is one of those commissions that has work actually to do. You know, in addition to the quarterly meetings, we have to regularly review cases, apparently, and then you know, really look at the decisions, et cetera, and see whether they make sense or not. I actually first learned of the possibility of being nominated in 2013. So it's been a lengthy process to actually come to the point where I've been nominated and going to potentially be confirmed by the Senate.
How does this fit in with your current role with the International Institute?
Well, it fits in with my personal and my public role from the point of view that it makes sense. You know, what we do at the International Institute and what I've had a lifelong mission to do is really to work toward ensuring equity for people who may, for a variety of reasons, be disenfranchised. This certainly because of language, cultural issues, et cetera, not just foreign-born, but everyone may, in fact, have difficulties with a system that may not really be well thought through and operate in a way where people have that equity.
Is your work at the Institute at all being affected by the current tone of the political campaign? We've talked about this before, but
yeah.
I don't think in the context of what's being said by some of the candidates.
Well, on a day-to-day basis, doing the work of the Institute, we don't necessarily see it in our processes. We certainly see it in terms of the feedback that we get from our new arrival clients, particularly those who are Muslim by background. There's a heightened sense of fear and concern about safety on their part. They get pushback from the community. The kids are getting harassed in school. You know, the very fact that they don't understand a lot of English saves them to a certain degree because they don't always understand even the discriminated sort of statements that are being made toward them. But most of them do understand that the climate in America right now, as the climate in the rest of the world, is very, very anti-immigrant and anti-refugee and anti-Muslim, and they're very concerned about that.
And it's all around them all the time.
Yes. Constantly. They can't get away from it.
Why is St. Louis the seemingly popular destination it is for so many people from other countries?
Well, in an interesting way, St. Louis has growing popularity. And back there in 1850, in fact, we were one of the most foreign-born cities in the nation. But in the period in between the 1950s and modern day, our population of foreign-born actually declined significantly. Just in the last couple decades, we've seen a growth, particularly in refugee populations. That's where I've seen it. Starting with the Vietnamese in the 70s and 80s and then the Bosnians into the 90s and now just a whole host of people from around the world. Mm-hmm. The very fact that we don't have a lot of foreign-born in St. Louis, in fact, means that the foreign-born who do come here are largely welcomed. You know, there's not a sense of heightened numbers that might make people fearful in some parts of the country.
Let me talk to our other guests about that.
Yeah.
Hey, Amy, I'm not sure. Were you born in this country?
I was, yeah.
All right. With the pronunciation of your last name, I thought maybe you had been born elsewhere. Let me turn to Sukh then. Mm-hmm. Why did you come to St. Louis?
I was initially resettled in California. My family were my part of the family lived here, and they invited me to come to St. Louis. They said it's really a nice and affordable place.
How long have you been here?
I have been living in St. Louis since 2012, July.
So it took 3 years for you to achieve citizenship status once you got here, right?
Yes,
right.
Yes.
Okay. We'll talk more about that. I'm going to go back to Anna for one more thought about yet another honor. Focus St. Louis is honoring the International Institute for its citizenship program.
Right, and it's May 12th, What's Right with the Region award. Awards the citizenship program of the International Institute, which has since the last 5 or 6 years has been actually helping about 100 people a year work towards citizenship is being recognized.
What makes it special?
Well, one of the things that makes it special actually are people like Amy and what we do at the Institute, because there are a tremendous number of people in the community that have high competencies in English and university degrees, for instance, and are able to, with help, study to achieve citizenship. But within the refugee populations, it's much more complex. Elderly individuals, it takes much longer for them to be able to achieve citizenship. The linguistics, and Amy can, you know, talk about the particulars, but really for immigrants, it's one set of issues. For refugees, it's another. And the language and cultural competencies are more difficult with the refugees.
All right, let's turn to Amy then. Amy, what are the challenges, some of the challenges you face in instructing these various peoples from various places of various ages?
Well, I think one of the biggest challenges is that so many of these cultures come here and they don't have any kind of background or reference to our history or our government. And so you have to really create a whole rubric for them to understand, even to be able to answer the questions that are part of the citizenship interview.
How deeply into the history do we go? Is it could you call it a superficial knowledge of history, or is it more detailed?
Parts of it maybe are more superficial, more of an overview. Some of it is rather detailed when they're asking questions like who wrote the Federalist Papers. That's a quite detailed question. Mm-hmm. So they just,
Sook, how difficult was it for you to learn what you had to learn to become a citizen?
I had a little bit of legal background overseas, and I studied American Constitution before I came here. So it was not really difficult for me in terms of, defining the government and stuff like that. But still, it took me more than 3 months to prepare for the current affairs, like who is the governor of, who is the senator and stuff like that.
Were you nervous about it at all?
I was completely nervous at the time of the interview.
Completely nervous until you passed. How about the test? Was the test tough?
Yeah, it was a tough test. Out of 100 questions, we don't know which are the questions to will be selected, like will be given. So we have to know all the 100 questions. So it's really...
Amy, you've got to lighten up a little bit on these on this test.
I wish I could. Yeah. I don't make the test. I just help them train to prepare for the test.
I've seen a number of ceremonies in which people have been sworn in as citizens, and it's always a very emotional and a very inspiring thing to watch. But Sook talks about the nerves. Tell me what your experience is with your students and the nerves part of it.
I always see that with the students, especially just the few days before their interview. I see some of them start to unravel. And so I take some special time with them to help them learn some relaxation techniques so that when they get into the interview, they're able to relax and remember their answers and take a little control of the interview.
So it's a two-part process, at
Definitely.
Least, with there is an interview and a written test.
Yes, there's the interview and the written test. So there's the 100 history and government questions, and then they have to read a sentence and write a sentence. And then also they're asking a lot of questions from their application and about the oath of allegiance that they take to become a citizen.
This is an important part of it. Again, I go back to the current climate, this whole process of loyalty and ascertaining exactly who you're dealing with.
Absolutely. And, there's a lot of misunderstanding about foreign-born when they come over here and, oh, gee, will they accept our culture? Will they fit into our culture? And one of my responses is that, if you look at the superficial kinds of issues, as I call them, how somebody dresses, the things that you see immediately, people may look different. But if you begin to look underneath, like the iceberg, you know, what's underneath as opposed to up above, what you find is there's a lot of commonality between people from all over the world. They all value family. You know, they appreciate freedom of religion. And with refugees particularly, they've escaped through oppressive regimes. And so coming over here, they really value the opportunity to vote. And so if one really sort of digs, what you find is you can find commonalities between people from all over the world. And that's the basis then of friendship and learning how to be able to get along together.
What about assimilation into the community? I know the International Institute is very active in making that be a successful transition.
Right. And we believe that this is really a two-way street when we talk about people connecting and learning to work together and become friends, family, and appreciate each other's culture. So we do things like our Festival of Nations every August to be able to introduce people to the many cultures. And those are the cultures not just of the foreign-born, the immigrants themselves, but the cultures of America. And so it's about Creole and Cajun and all of the cultures that are deeply rooted in our society as well. Because if we do that, then we find the commonalities. It's like language. You know, if you look at how much of what might be considered foreign language, which is part of America's conversational English today, we are an amalgam of many cultures. And we have to remember that that makes us a richer, better society.
We'd all be talking like Geoffrey Chaucer if it weren't for that, wouldn't we?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Sook, did you have any trouble making that transition in coming to St. Louis, assimilating into the culture?
Yeah, when we came to first time in St. Louis as an immigrant, it's really hard to know, you know, the area, like to find out grocery stores, to find a place of faith and, you know, stuff like that. So it took me a while to figure out where the places are and how to go, how to reach there. And the other thing with this immigrant population is a driving issue. We are not very familiar with the maps and the, you know, the modern system that we use here. And then that makes us kind of really hard to get into places sometimes.
Amy, although you're an instructor, Amy, I imagine you have to deal with some of this as well.
Yes, yeah. I do. I really try to help the students figure out how to navigate to their interviews and things like that or other issues that come up. They come up with all sorts of issues even in the process of learning for citizenship.
We have to take a break. We'll do that now. We're talking with Anna Carlson and others from the International Institute. Anna has just been nominated by Governor Nixon to be a member of the Human Rights Commission here in Missouri. We were talking about that initially, but now we're talking about people adjusting from other countries, adjusting to life in St. Louis, and apparently that's working pretty darn well, which we're happy to hear. We'll be coming back to continue the conversation with Anna Carlson, who is the CEO and president of the International Institute. Also with me in the studio is Amy Pushkash, citizenship instructor with the International Institute, and Sook Subkota. He's from Bhutan, and he was naturalized as an American citizen back in March of 2015, I believe it was. Back to continue the conversation. If you'd like to be a part of it, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. We'll take an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. Send us a tweet at STL on Air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Let me come back to you, Amy, and talk about generational differences with the people that you're instructing. I have to imagine that it can be more difficult perhaps with some age groups than it is with others.
Yeah, the older someone is, the harder it is, or I should say the longer it can take for them to learn, just because there's already so many things in your brain. Yeah. So, and then many times some of the older people, they haven't learned to read or write in their own language. So they really have two things going on, a lack of education from their home country, and then age can play a factor.
Is there a difference in the people that you're dealing with on a daily basis between those who are refugees and those who are immigrants?
There can be, definitely. I see a lot of refugees, and in the evening program, I see kind of a mixture. I would say that there's another class that we have at a kind of an intermediate advanced English level that's more for immigrants. So I can have a mixed class, but usually I have more refugees.
Right. Anna, what about that? I mean, do you see differences in attitude, approach, these two groups?
Well, there's no question that the older you are, you know, the more you have formulated attitudes, you know, and the learning process becomes harder. I think that there's a break-off just in terms of college, of just school, elementary school and the education process. And I remember our English class instructor saying that around fourth, fifth grade is where, you know, it's less. Before that, you know, children are like sponges. They learn language. They take on culture. Mm-hmm. It's automatic. And then each year after that, it becomes more and more complicated to learn. And if you arrive over here 50, 60 years of age, you may have limited English already, then it's going to take years to be able to acquire the knowledge that it might have taken somebody who's half that age months to acquire.
Mm-hmm. Would you talk about that, Sook, for us in terms of the difficulty? Did you speak English before you came to this country?
I did.
So that was obviously very, very helpful.
It was really helpful for me, the fact like I knew English and of the fact like I knew a little bit about United States before I came in. But most of the folks coming from our country, this was a monarchy and it was not even democracy. They don't know what it is. You know, and then when they are just coming to a very republic state, and that becomes another harder step for them to understand all these political changes that they are going through. So it will be extremely difficult for those folks with, you know, basic level of English to understand. They are not only learning citizenship stuff, but also learning the system of government and what they went through there, and this is a complete new environment. So,
did you come here as a refugee or as an immigrant?
I came here as a refugee.
Really, because of the conditions that you just described in your country.
Yeah. I was a refugee. I was. We stayed in Nepal for around 18 years in the refugee camp, and then finally we resettled in 2009 November.
18 years in a refugee camp?
Yes.
It's hard for us to comprehend a life like that. How did you manage to come here? I mean, you were in the camp, and then all of a sudden you're in the United States. How did that happen?
I don't know about this diplomatic and political issues, but all of a sudden we were offered for the resettlement. We had three options that UNHCR gave us. One was assimilation in the Nepal. Nepal didn't really want to take out the extra population. Mm-hmm. And then the second was like third country settlement. And the third one was repatriation to the own country. Despite like 14 rounds of bilateral talks between Nepal and India that failed. And that's where the resettlement process kicked in somehow. And then we were offered the resettlement chance by United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. And I applied for the resettlement and I was selected.
Right. Are there many of your fellow countrymen in St. Louis?
Yes, there are.
That must make it a little bit easier for you.
Yes, around like 1,500, I would guess.
Wow, that surprises me. And
yeah,
I don't know why
it
should.
Yeah, over a period of years, we've been sponsoring the Bhutanese here to St. Louis who had lived in Nepal. It's an interesting situation with the Bhutanese because they really were ethnic Nepalese who several generations ago immigrated to the country of Bhutan and then were eventually essentially kicked out by the Sultan several decades ago. And because then Nepal didn't want them either, they ended up languishing in these refugee camps for several decades until finally they received resettlement offers and were able to come to the United States.
Yeah. Let me turn back to the instruction, the citizenship instruction mm-hmm. with Amy, if I can. Amy, how long is the course that these folks would be taking for the citizenship tests?
Well, it's a 14-week course, and they can take it multiple times, as many times as they feel like they need, and then I meet with them individually and kind of help them assess what their skills are and if they're ready for the interview to apply.
What happens if they fail the test?
Well, if they fail it one time, they get a second time to retake that portion for free. And so then I have about a month and a half or 2 months to get them ready for that portion that they failed. So if they failed the writing part, then I would help them just on the writing part in order to pass that.
How large is a typical class?
Most of my classes right now, I have about at least 30 students, up to between 30 and 40 students in a class.
From a variety of countries, needless to say.
Yes.
How do they get along? I mean, you have various levels of achievement in language. Mm-hmm. Cultures are different. How does that work?
They get along really well because they're all kind of in the same boat. They're all wanting to get their citizenship, and they are learning together. So for the lower level student or one that hasn't learned to read and write in their own language or in English, we have table groups and we have volunteer tutors that help them. So we have smaller groups within the class that they can learn together. And again, it's mixed cultures, but they help each other to learn as well as have an American tutor.
Well, sometimes I'm sure that when you're dealing with mixed cultures, you're also dealing with cultures that perhaps in their home environment, mm-hmm. there were conflict, there was hostility. Does any of that occur? And if so, how do you deal with it?
Surprisingly, it really doesn't. Because once they come here, they kind of they don't have animosity towards those other groups, and maybe they didn't even in their own culture, in their own country. So when they come here, they kind of bond together because it's a more similar group for them to relate to.
We're all in this together kind of thing,
yeah,
all of a sudden.
Yeah, exactly.
How about that, Anna, that whole notion of people coming from cultures that had hostile relations coming here?
You know, I'm reminded back at the time of Desert Storm, in fact, and I had two Arab-speaking caseworkers, one who was Iraqi and one who was a Kurd. And we kind of talked among ourselves, the other staff, and said, well, how are we going to, we had hired these people, how are we going to deal with this? And we said, well, we're going to put them in a room together and see how they can work it out. And so we put their desks next to each other and said, okay, you know, work it out. And they came to us about an hour later and they said, we figured it out. And we said, well, and they said, we are united in our hate for Saddam. So they had found a commonality at that point. And that's what it's about, is within the depth of all of this, there are commonalities.
We only have a limited amount of time left. Let me just ask you, and I'll start with you, what do these people from other countries bring to us in terms of what they contribute to the community?
Resilience and a desire to be successful that really translates into becoming entrepreneurs and really wonderful citizens. You know, they're prepared to be Americans, and if we who are already here welcome them, then it can be a really great society.
Sukh, do you want to answer that question? What do you feel you bring to this country?
Actually, we bring language, culture, food, you know, and all this stuff, like, you know.
Are you in business for yourself?
No, I have not started yet.
Are you going to?
I'm not really planning at this moment, but we are just planning to open up a restaurant, if that works, on a partnership basis.
All right. Well, there you go. Another business that could be opened by someone coming in. And the time we have left, Amy, contribute to this part of the conversation. What do you think they contribute to our community?
Yeah, I really agree with what both people said here with both Anna and Sukh, because and I think that the resilience is a huge part of it. When you see what they've gone through and just their determination, it really is inspiring.
Well, yeah, and we have a lot of them, and they've contributed a lot, and we're trying to bring a lot more in, aren't we, with Through the Mosaic Project.
Yeah.
We can talk about that another time. Our time is just about up. I want to thank you all so much for being with us, Anna Crosland again, and congratulations to you for your most recent recognition. Amy Pushkash, thank you so much for being with us. Keep up the good work at the Institute. And Sukh Subkota, thank you very much for being with us. Congratulations on your citizenship.
Thank you.
This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.